from MLU headquarters in Philadelphia.
You should go underneath it.
Oh, way out deep!
This is Cleats and Cuffy.
Hit it! Oh, what a hit that was! Murray!
Everything ultimate, from the field to the border, with Jeff Snyder and Nick Dark.
Hang it up there! Oh, yes!
Hello,
Mr. Graham!
And we're back. Cleats and Cufflinks. We're recording for 2 weeks in a row, which is nice. We're back in the studio.
2 weeks in a row.
How have you been, Nicholas?
I've been all right.
I don't care.
Yeah, I didn't think you did. You also know.
I also know.
Because we've spent a lot of time together in the last couple of days traveling up to the Big Apple, to New York City.
A lot of regrets.
Yeah. Where the salsa that is not El Paso is made. Do you remember those commercials?
I have no idea what you're talking about.
You don't know what I'm talking about? New York City? No?
No.
A bunch of cowboys sitting around a fire eating salsa. One of them looks at the back of the thing and it's made in New York City. He's upset, apparently.
Okay.
All right. I'm done talking about it.
All right, Nicholas. Hopefully,
it's a classic. If you know that commercial.
If you know anything about what he's talking about.
And you loved it. New York City.
What we did do is go to New York and we met up with Michelle Kondracki and Anthony Duarte.
We did.
GM and assistant GM of the Rumble. And we met up at a bar called the New York Beer Company, which has the New York beer stock program running.
Yeah, so there's ticker boards around the bar, and as beers either gain popularity or lose popularity in the entire bar, their stock price goes up and down.
Every 3 minutes.
Every 3 minutes, there's a change in stock price, and it reads, you know, you can see the percent change over time. We did not get the event that I so desperately hoped for, which was a full stock market crash. Which I hear does happen. But.
Every 3 minutes, the prices are going up and down, usually by a quarter.
Yeah.
I thought it was really dumb. And then after 16 minutes of staring at the board, I realized it really does work.
Yeah.
Now I just couldn't stop staring at and hoping for things to happen. And then she said that they can get down to like $2 or whatever.
Yeah.
Just at some times.
Yeah. You want to buy low.
Buy low.
Buy low, drink high.
Drink high.
I don't know.
No,
I don't know if that works.
Oh, that's might not be your best.
It's a beer market.
A beer market. Look at that. Yeah, you're on a roll. They're awesome.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And we always brag about our GMs because it's easy because they're awesome. But they just were so on top of things. They had documentation ready. They had their ideas ready. They were telling us about their February 7th. Summit.
The Rumble Summit,
which you wanted to name Rummit.
Rummit.
That did not go through.
Did not go over well. They also didn't invite us.
And they were explaining
In
to
fact,
us,
aggressively the opposite.
They said this is just for the team. And I was impressed.
Yeah, I like it.
And hurt.
Yep. Also because a little sad.
I know.
We're just going to be outside the window staring in, tear in eye.
They said they'd send us a video, which means Greg gets to go.
So Greg gets to go to the Rumble Summit. Interesting.
Finally, Greg has a one up on us.
Doesn't seem fair.
Yeah. But very good time.
It's a good thing we're sending him out to the tryout this weekend to stand in the cold while others run around and stay warm and take some video.
Job.
So look forward to some video footage of the New York Rumbles tryout.
Which are also our very own Billy Sickles is going up. Right? Greg?
Greg has quit. Yep,
Greg
there
quit.
He goes. He does this pretty regularly.
You can't see this on video, but it's quite entertaining. Now, They not only do they have these great plans, but they seem to have quite the vision for improving New York this year. And they were all focused on the most important thing, which is fan acquisition, right? How to get in front of the kids, the youth, the ultimate players out there who are the quote-unquote low-hanging fruit. And then how to just make sure everyone knows about the Rumble. And I got to tell you, I liked everything they said. I was eating out of their hand. I was ready.
Oh yeah, I really thought it was I thought it was great. They seem to have a good staff that they're putting together. They kept talking about their org chart, which I kind of loved. So that, and also we're going to find out soon about their new stadium search, which I'm excited about. So we'll be sure to let everybody know when they settle on a place. But they seem to have some great options, which is probably
important.
The biggest challenge in the world in New York.
New York's really confusing.
Yeah.
So for someone who doesn't live there, they don't realize how little area there is for stadiums, you know, and stuff like that. And how no one has a car. So it's a different way of thinking. You know, like in Philadelphia, we are used to driving to the big stadiums. Or you take the subway directly to there because it's just obviously direct. Boston Foxborough is in Foxborough. You know what I mean? Like, it's not in Boston. So you drive. In New York, it's you take the subway to New Jersey, right? If you're going to go to a
Going to the game last year, you had to take either a bus from from the Port Authority.
Well, I'm talking about for like a Jets game.
Oh, to go out to those
games.
Yeah, you get to take the subway out there.
So they're used to that, but I don't even know if you could drive. I mean, I'm sure people drive that thing, but the traffic must be insane.
Yep.
And then you have Madison Square Garden, which is right in the middle of all the action, which is really cool.
Yeah, difficult to play Ultimate in that building, though.
I don't see why. I would figure it out.
Let's figure it out.
So, and then you have in Boston, you have Fenway, right in the middle of the city.
I love that. Hey, we almost had the.
You been there, Tom? You been to Fenway?
Not for a game, but for a tour. Yeah.
He said not for. We're gonna go. We're gonna go as a group.
I've been before.
You've been to Fenway.
I've been to Fenway. Terribly uncomfortable seating, but a wonderful stadium.
Did you sit on the green monster?
I just sat in this. I mean, it was a small chair for me at 14.
The wall. Did you sit?
No,
on the
I didn't sit on the monster. No, I was in. I think I was in right field.
Okay.
You got the complete opposite thing in Dallas, AT&T Stadium.
Dallas.
Dallas. Greg is telling us something about the Dallas Stadium.
The American Professional Sports Stadium, inaccessible by public transit.
Ah.
In any fashion.
Cowboys. Dallas Cowboys. Only professional stadium inaccessible by public transit.
That is a good
I would like to know if Greg is right about that. If anybody can look that up for us.
At MLU Greg. Tell him if he's right. All right. You had a fun little story for me about you went to your uncle's house and you had this conversation. tell me if the fans want to hear this.
Yes. I went to my uncle's house for Thanksgiving. We had a wonderful Thanksgiving. Mm-hmm. Nice trip with the family. A lot of turkey. And I'm at my uncle's house and he has this deck of cards that are conversation starter cards, which apparently is something you need if your neighbors are boring. And he has this deck of cards and you're supposed to pick one up and you read a fun fact off of it, and that sparks what all the rest of us do normally, which is talk.
You are such a jerk.
I know. I feel bad about it, but it's true. It's weird. It's still weird to me. What I did like, though, was that he had taken one of the cards out that he had come across, and it said, the first season of Professional Ultimate began in April of 2013. And that made me very happy.
A little wrong. But I kind of like it.
Because, technically the AUDL was in 2012, but I'm going to take it.
Yeah,
I'm going to take it and enjoy it.
It was a little compliment coming our way. I enjoyed it.
I also wanted to bring up, too, you had an interesting thing you observed this weekend that you have in our notes here, and I noticed you were going to skip, which is we have an office fantasy football league, which has been, shall we say, a bit of a struggle for you. Hmm. And fun fact, you did not make the playoffs.
Thanks.
And yet, on an up note for you, you scored the fourth most points in the league.
This makes you so happy.
Makes me so happy.
First of all, I want you to know, I drafted Brock Osweiler, so I didn't do a lot of things right.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
If anybody knows who he is, that's even impressive.
I've never even heard of him.
I made some mistakes, but I ended up scoring the fourth most points, and I lost all the time.
You did.
So
pretty consistently.
And you are number one or number two?
Number one.
And number one.
First place.
No, you know, Tom says number two.
First place. Did I drop the two? Tom's telling me I dropped the two. Oh, come on.
Billy hopped both of us.
Okay.
That's painful. Well, see, this is how much I pay attention to it.
You're still number two, but I think you're going to lose to Dave Pennypacker.
Yeah, we all think Dave Pennypacker. His team is on the upswing.
He's got Andrew Luck, and Andrew Luck is set to throw 27 touchdown passes per game.
Yeah, that's so about the rate that he's moving toward.
So speaking of fantasy,
yeah,
I can't promise anything, but we have been doing some fun stuff working on a fantasy app that I give a 15% chance of being live this year. But
not a very high percent chance.
Because I got to be honest. Right. I give 15%. Right. I give it a 95% chance of being live 2016. And it would be, if you know Yahoo Fantasy Football or ESPN, whatever, it would be like that.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen some of I helped put together some of the screenshots for examples for this, and I've seen the back end that you guys are working on. It's impressive.
Yeah. Well, we got really, really lucky, and there's a good story about how we got lucky and met a few people who know way more about fantasy sports than we ever could have imagined. People that have actually, wrote some of the first ones or wrote some of the biggest ones. So we'll just say that there it is, and we're really lucky to have them and excited to be working with them. So
I'm excited. Yeah, I'm looking forward to sharing some of the work that our stats guys have been doing on the back end too.
I gotta give Luke a shout out.
Oh, boy.
You know, I give them a lot of...
Grief. Let's say grief.
Grief, okay.
Grief. That's the polite word for it.
See, in leadership training in the military, I learned that for every compliment you give someone, you have earned yourself really just an unending number of degrading insults. I use that with Luke, and he responds well. But no, he's done a great job along with Timbo. What did you just say? The both championship games in 2013 and 2014 had the same number of completed passes. 455.
That is a crazy stat.
That is a cool stat. I like that.
How is that even possible?
I don't know. But if it happens this year, then we know it's just is.
It just is. Just, yeah, that's how many throws you get.
Okay, we got three segments today.
All right.
First segment, which we just threw in, is an article just written by Tina Booth.
I did read that on article just now.
Just now we just both read now. It. So we're going to we have nothing prepared for this.
Nope. Just going to wing it.
Segment two.
Yeah.
We're talking about starting a business. The five most important things you need to know if you want to start a business. We have a lot of people ask us about all the operations and things that happen here in the MLU. We have a lot of young entrepreneurs out there, and we're going to give you what we've learned in our 30 years.
Yeah.
Segment three, Twitter hashtag, I think, I am Matt Hamlin.
Oh, his handle is I am Matt
Hamlin.
Matt Hamlin. Is that right?
I think it is. They'll look it up. Origin of the MLU. He wanted to know the story. And you know what? This is the first time publicly we'll ever say the full story. We will leave out a few names and change a few names and change a couple things.
To protect the innocent.
To protect the innocent. But you're going to get to hear the story that no one except a few people have ever heard before, and I look forward to it. Okay. Let's start with this article by Tina Booth. Now, it starts off, the title of the article is "It is time for a compromise."
Mm-hmm.
And she has the logo of USA Ultimate and the AUDL and the MLU up there.
Yeah.
And basically,
I can't help but notice, Tina, you listed us last in that.
Yeah.
Just in.
Come on.
From left to right?
Yeah, I mean, it's not alphabetical, no matter which way you do it. So in there is a picture of a white cap stad. So he's wearing his white cap shirt. She's talking about how at their clinics that people were just covered in white caps gear and that not covered in club gear, right? That's kind of the first part. And she says the problem is that we do a good job of marketing. The leagues do a good job of getting the word out there. And she's basically saying it would be a whole lot better if we all worked together than if we didn't. I got it right?
Yeah. So I think the overview of her initial point is that because the pro leagues and, you know, particularly what we do, which we can speak better to, are so fan focused, it's inevitable that younger players who are beginning to play the sport and want to be fans of the sport are going to identify with the players in these leagues and with our players. And she speaks particularly about the Whitecaps, who do a great job with doing clinics and getting out to the community. And her point is that this doesn't have to be, from what I understand, it doesn't have to be a problem. It can be, you know, through cooperation, we could use that ability combined with USAU's reach, which is more across the country, to develop youth programming and to further the growth of Ultimate.
Yeah.
And I think she makes good points.
She definitely makes some good points. She says, her last section says, the compromise. She talks about how the USAU made a clear policy against working with the MLU, right?
Or recognizing us.
Recognizing.
Yeah.
She suggests, and of course, well, I'll get into that. We'll get into what our stance was. But she suggests, number one, that broker an agreement with the leagues to have a USAU presence at their games to promote the sport to its young audience. Right.
Yeah. So like, she's talking about a booth there where, you can say, hey, you want to play Ultimate like these guys do. Here are the people to talk to.
Activation
booth. Yep.
Yeah, absolutely. Number two, welcome players from the pro leagues at USAU clinics or any other youth targeted event. The volunteers running these clinics get all the help they can get. I'm basically saying, let's all be together, just like any USAU basketball and the NBA, all this stuff.
Yeah, it's weird because that's the thing I thought when I was looking at this. It's so, what she's saying here is such a simple thing, and it reflects the relationship between any other pro league and its national organization.
Yep. And then she just says the last thing. She, you know, she didn't mention refs or spirit of the game or any of those things. And I think that's good. Those to me are...
I liked her reason for that, too. To quote her, she says, "These debates are often too theoretical and miss the real practical work that still needs to be done." And that's the... I like that idea. We have practical work to do to grow our game. Mm-hmm. And we have so many opportunities to do it. It's such an accessible sport. I love the idea that this sport is an easy sport for schools that are struggling to support more expensive programs to pick up. You know, lacrosse is very expensive. Hockey is very expensive. Football is very expensive.
Yeah.
We have a sport that's a nice alternative to schools that are struggling with that, and to, you know, not just schools, but community organizations and other types of programs.
Right.
And the idea that we're going to get hung up in this internal debate that's going to hamstring our ability to create that growth, it seems absurd.
Yeah, and we're set to run 200, at a minimum, really, 250 clinics. Our target's 500 clinics in this calendar year or 18 months, right?
Yeah.
Think about it. That's a lot of clinics.
That is a lot of clinics.
And that's something we've gotten pretty good at. So, you know, 500 clinics and three camps, it'd be great. It'd be great to all be together in some way, because this is the rising tide lifts all boats. The more they hear about Ultimate, the more they talk about Ultimate, and this is anybody, the more they engage in Ultimate.
Yeah, and the more everybody's, if we have to look at everything as a business too, the more everybody's bottom line improves. And the more we're able to fulfill our mission, you know, our mission to our fans, our players, our staff, et cetera, USAU's mission to their members, both of those are served by this. And I think from our point of view, we know that, we know there's been tension between the organizations, obviously. You know, we have problems with some of the ways that they run their business, and they have problems with the ways that we interpret Ultimate and run our business. But I don't think those problems are in any way insurmountable. And I don't think our differences in opinions on certain issues are in any way a problem in terms of working together to develop the sport.
Now let's turn the mirror around. Look at ourselves.
Let's look at ourselves.
Okay. You look great today.
By the way, most of you aren't watching this on video because, you know, obviously the listening audience much bigger, but it is Scarf Day.
It's Scarf Day.
Here in the
white cap scarf, in
Cleats and Cufflinks studio. We have two teams have scarves in the MLU, the white caps and the Stags. Mm-hmm. I'm wearing my Sons of Ben scarf,
which was given
to me at the first MLU championship game by the Supporters Club for the Philadelphia Union, the MLS
awesome.
Team.
Yep.
And you are wearing just a terrible, terrible scarf.
I'm wearing Greg's Chelsea scarf.
Yeah, it's Greg sized.
Yeah, it is Greg sized. It's
Greg sized, like little it, scarf.
He says it's a bar scarf, a barf.
A barf.
Yeah. Right. So I like it.
It's nice.
Anyway.
So yes, the mirror is off. Yes, we got a little.
Boy, you really looked in that mirror for a long time.
Woof.
We did the podcast and the analysis of the USAU budget. We were very critical of them. You regret that podcast?
I don't regret the podcast. I think that it helped start a conversation that was worth having. How about you? What are your fans on it?
I do. Well, I'm a proud guy.
Yeah.
But I regret parts of it.
I'd agree with that.
Here's what I regret. We bring so much positivity to so many things we do. And of course, whenever you start a business, and we'll talk about this in our second segment, you get a lot of negativity put towards you. And you constantly have to put it aside or bury it or use it to fuel you. And you never want to take negativity into your business. It just doesn't help anything. And we're so good pretty much all the time about spinning positives. And we preach it. And me personally, I brought out a lot of negatives about USAU that I wish I would have done differently. Because I could have done it as a member who was concerned instead of a member who was angry.
Right.
And I could have done it as someone who wanted to partner with them. And instead, I came off and bullied him a bit. I'm not a fan of that. Right. I attacked him. So this year, we're going to do an analysis of their budget again, because they're a 501c3, so we can do that. And we're gonna talk about the positives and all the things they've done well. We're going to talk about the things we have questions about. And it's going to be in the positive. It's going to say, okay, we'd like to know this. As members, we want to see it help it grow. And here's what we're concerned about as members. But here's what we think you've done great. Because this is about being positive. And that's where I want to go forward with them.
And regardless. I think I'd like to add something to that as well. I think one of the things that, you know, maybe didn't get enough focus either, is where are the areas where ourselves or other organizations can step in and provide help? Like, what are the things that we can do as members and as people concerned with the sport to help bolster areas where we see they need it? And I know that one of the things that we brought up and we talked a lot about was the membership, the number right. of people who are members and the growth of that membership. And I think, hearkening back to Tina's article, we can provide access to a large number of people who might be interested in becoming members of USAU, and we can help work with USAU as best we can to even increase the benefit of that membership. Yeah. I can already think of some great ways we could work together. And frankly, that's the last thing I want to put in here is I would like to work with USAU. I think it's better for the sport. It's better for both organizations. And hopefully, you know, they're going to be willing to revisit their position on that. And I think you can take it from us that our position is a willingness to work together to figure things out.
I like the way you said that. An honest feeling here. I hope they feel this way too. I'm bored with it. Like, it's boring now.
Yeah.
We've kind of been standing on our soapbox talking about what we think, and then they talked about what they think, and I feel like we all look like a bunch of, I'll be honest, I think we look like a bunch of kids, you know?
Yeah, and particularly to outsiders, you don't realize, I don't think, how irrelevant some of the arguments that we're having are to people who are not deeply in the game.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean that you can't still have these philosophical debates and discussions. I think that's healthy.
Yeah.
It's just become too much a part of our front-facing business when we talk about our relationship with USAU. And that doesn't make any sense to people who aren't deeply, deeply embroiled in the game itself.
Yeah, and we're fueling kind of the and this is, you know, again, we're taking responsibility. We're fueling the, you know, who's better, what's better, what's right. They have great values. They have their gender equity policies. They work to try and make the sport and the way they present it very fair and accessible. And it's good stuff what they're doing. There's things that I would like to help with. But either way, again, I'm going to focus on the positive. So our feeling is we work so much. So I'm bored with the, you know, any contention with them. We're here to help. If they don't want to partner, I have nothing bad to say. That we'll just wait here. Patiently and supportively until that day comes.
Well, we'll also reach out.
I did.
You wrote them an email just today.
I wrote Tom Crawford and Mike Payne and a bunch of others. The whole email. I wrote them all an email saying, I would like, you know, I want to let all the water that's, you know, under the bridge. Like, we've all said stuff we didn't, it wasn't nice back and forth to each other, right? We said lots of things that we all regret. And, It's over for me. It's over. There's no more negativity coming from me to USAU. However, I will still, as a member, I will still be critical, but I'm going to be critical in what I think is a proper way. I'm allowed to ask questions. I'm allowed to raise points. We're public figures. We're allowed to say things about an organization, but it won't be in the just the way we did it before. It'll be in the here's what we think. What are the fans and members out there thinking? How can we help?
Yeah, I would agree.
So thank you, Tina. Two eyes in Tina.
Two eyes. I like it.
You can never forget her name because you don't forget it.
Exactly.
It makes me really want to name somebody, my daughter Tina. Like, can I rename a daughter?
Yeah, I mean, you can.
She's 5 months old.
Oh, yeah. You're fine. As long as it's under 6 months.
That's
the
rule.
That's the rule.
Okay. Thank you very much for your article. Thank you for having, you know, the leadership stance and role to step out there and say something. And you got me to write USAU an email and really just come to grips with how we'd acted and say, okay, it's time to be better. So I really appreciate it, Tina, and hope to see you at a Whitecaps game.
Indeed. All right. Go read Tina's article.
Yeah.
It's on ultiworld.com right now.
It is time for a compromise.
Get out there and read it.
Okay. Next segment is starting a business.
I love that we're doing this as a segment on cleats and cufflinks. This is a massive topic. Starting a business.
I understand it.
Yeah.
We're talking about the top five most important things to know. But first, we're going to take a break. We're not going to take a break because we don't take breaks. But we're going to talk about a new deal that the MLU just signed.
Yeah, sorry. So we're not getting to segment two yet. We're doing our sponsorship update. We have two deals. We'll start with the Green Turtle.
Oh yeah, that's right.
The Green Turtle down in Washington D.C. Has signed a deal to be the official bar, I guess you would say, of the D.C. Current.
Yes.
So Green Turtle, a good place. I've actually been there before.
Love that place.
Yep.
We had a championship celebration there, and I think everybody had a pretty good time. We'll just say that that place was entertaining.
They will accommodate the craziness of the DC Current team, and they're going to be having an event. So if you're down in the DC area on December 18th,
yes,
there is going to be a signing event and sort of kickoff party for the 2015
a ring ceremony.
DC Current, and they're doing a ring ceremony. They got some rings.
Our shareholders, Mark Vangelista, Darren Schultz, Dan Vogel. And
this isn't a mass wedding kind of thing. This isn't that kind of ring ceremony.
No, not like that.
Oh, okay.
But they got their...
Like a Super Bowl ring.
Yeah, they got their troops some presents.
That's very nice.
They're pretty cool guys.
So, yeah, what do you know?
They're gonna present them. I haven't seen them yet.
Mm.
Okay. So apparently, I told them that I thought my face should be on the side of it. But
Well, there's just going to be one ring in there. It's from you. That's the one ring to rule them all.
Right, yeah,
one ring to find them.
Oh, I like this. I like this. So, but yeah, so we're going to go. So December 18th, come to the Green Turtle in
we'll
D.C.
We'll be down there.
Do not park in a parking garage.
Nope, because they close at 11.
It goes way before 11, and you can't get your car out. But there is an attendant who will answer within 15 seconds to tell you that in no way will you ever get your car.
And there is a nearby hotel.
There is a nearby
hotel.
Which will accommodate two
circumstances.
Yeah, 2 6'4" plus men and 1 5 foot. How much? 5 foot 5?
Yeah. He likes to say 5.
The hotel was not nearby.
Yeah, the hotel was not nearby. Yeah, my feet still hurt. Anyway, that's a different story.
That's a different story.
Okay, second sponsor.
Yeah, the second sponsor.
Big one.
Very, very excited about this sponsorship. Huge deal. The sponsors community did a great job bringing this in. We have an official travel sponsor for the entire league, which is U.S. Coachwiz.
Yes.
They will also be the jersey sponsor for the New York Rumble.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll be sponsoring some other content throughout the year, so you're certainly going to see their name around. In addition, of course, they're going to be providing all the transportation for our teams, except for San Francisco, as they tend to fly to their games, being a little further away.
I didn't tell you about that, did I? That they have to take a coach now. they're not going to be happy about it. I'm kidding.
We would never put someone on a bus ride that long.
Yes. But we did actually get sponsored by Princess Cruises.
So you're going to be taking
it. It's going to be really tough for you guys.
Really weird.
But you'll have fun on the way there. Again, that is also a lie.
That's a lie.
If it were true, you would not be mad. Take a Princess Cruise.
I hear they're nice.
Oh, they're wonderful.
Yeah.
You think you wouldn't like them. You think that you would hate it because you hate everything.
I do hate things.
You would love it.
Do I get a manicure and like a facial on this cruise?
Okay,
let me tell
you why you would like it.
Is there a glittery makeup portion of the trip? Have you been on one of these?
I've been on two of them.
Princess Cruise?
But no, yes. Royal Caribbean.
Royal Caribbean's different, I think.
Are they?
Princess.
Okay.
I don't know.
They're the same.
All right.
Listen to this.
Tell me why.
I want you to listen to this.
I'm going
to
listen.
You get your room in the ship.
You get a little room.
And
a berth. If you will.
A berth.
Yep.
They call that because getting in and out the door is like birth. You get this little room and you get into it and you realize that you can't stay in this room because it's horrible. So you leave and you have your dancing club. You have your bar. You have your cigar bar. You have your pool table. You have your game room. You have everything. All of these things they serve drinks at.
Oh, so I like that.
You have a good night of drinking, playing pool. There's basketball.
You can play pool.
It auto levels.
Okay, I mean,
okay. There's a whole game. There's darts. Darts are very dangerous. There are all these things. Lawn darts, actually,
lawn
is
darts.
Even more dangerous.
Terrible idea.
Some of them you can fish off the back. Seriously. There's jacuzzis, there's pools. Anyway, you're doing all this while drinking and having a good time. There's food everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you realize you're too tipsy to drive home, you're on a boat, so you just walk to your room. And then you do this repeatedly for 7 days.
It's not healthy,
but it's fun. You would enjoy it, trust me. We're going to go cruise together, me and you.
It seems like a terrible idea, but I'm in.
All right, let's do it. Okay. U.S. Coachways, we're really excited to be with them. It was awesome doing it. And also, we got to give a shout-out. In the last 18 months, We tracked what sponsorship had come in.
Yeah.
And Jonathan McQueen comes on board with his troops, Billy Sickles and Bert Katzen.
Mm-hmm.
And in the last 40 days, they've closed almost 100% more than we closed in the last 18 months.
Yeah.
And they are almost, and we'll talk about this again next week, they're almost halfway to their goal for the end of 2015. They're doing an incredible job.
And I couldn't be more excited. And the stuff in the pipeline is great, too. I feel like I'm sitting on secrets every day.
I know, that good secrets. Well, you're sitting on Skippy. Well, that sounds weird.
Yep.
It was fun. All right, let's move on. It's not, you're making it weird. Oh, man. I'm going to say that it doesn't sound weird. You're just making it weird. Okay. Okay.
Oh, man.
Starting a business.
Yeah, let's talk about that. Raising.
We have a good time here at the MLU. If you want to work, if you want to intern, you want to get a job here, just reach out to us.
Yeah, reach out. We got jobs.
There's
we
no HR department. Starting a business, top five most important things you need to know. Now, this is important. Starting a business is a big deal. You will never feel the way you feel when you start a business, because when you work for someone, it's somebody else is essentially in charge and responsible. And you
it's
just
somebody else's problem.
Right, right.
Really. I talk to people about this all the time, because I get people now coming to me for advice on starting business. I'm working with a guy starting a brewery. I do things like this all the time. And the first thing I say is that you should never do it. It's a terrible idea, but it will also be the best thing you'll ever do.
Okay, good.
But that's the way it works, because it is. It's really, 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 really hard.
Yeah.
And it will ruin many parts of your life, but it will also make you a better person and make you happier in the long run.
Can we not have you give any advice on this segment? I'm so depressed.
I'm kind of a downer.
Yeah, you are. That's what we do. Okay, so let's get serious, because the top five most important things you need to know. Nick and I talked about this, and all of these, I'm going to say, they're not essential. I think a few of them are essential. But if you do all these five things, your business will, I don't know what to,
you got
I can't
a shot.
Say, I can't say it's going to succeed, but you'll have no regrets. Right?
Well, that's also, yeah, I like that.
So the first thing is, you have to have a vision, right? There has to be a mission of what you're trying to do, right? So let's say you want to start a restaurant. You say, I want to start a restaurant. I've always loved, the Italian cuisine. I want to make an Italian restaurant. That can't just, that's not a mission. That's not a vision, really. That's a desire.
Yeah.
Right. The vision is, what's it going to look like? What's it going to feel like? What's the food going to taste like? All those things, you have to see it. Because if you don't see it, no one else is going to see it. There's a great interview of Arnold Schwarzenegger talking about how important vision is. And he says, a guy came up to you and said, what's your name? Arnold Schwarzenschnitzel? You're never going to be a great actor here. You have a terrible accent and you don't know what you're doing. Right. And now Arnold Schwarzenegger is, I think he's done all of the jobs that you could do. He's an actor. He's a congressman. He's a business owner.
He's been
he was a congressman, right?
He was a governor.
Yeah, he was a governor. He did it all. So, I mean, it's just, again, he said he had a vision for it, right? So, and then the mission, right? What do you think about that? Like, how do you pick your mission?
I think you have to have really this ties to vision as well. You have to have a look at where you want to end up at some point. And I think too many people get into a business like, I'm going to do, your restaurant example is a good example. I'm going to run a restaurant. We're going to make enough money that I can keep running that restaurant. And that's kind of it. But where does the restaurant take you in 5 years? Where does it take you in 10 years? And if you don't have that model, you can't convince anyone else to come on board. And I think that's the biggest thing. No one's going to get in a car with you if they don't know where you're going. And, well, I mean, some people will, but you don't want to pick those people up.
Right.
Because they have other ideas.
Right.
They have other reasons for being in the car than the destination.
You've made this so scary. Okay, keep going.
I've made everything creepy. But it has to, you have to create something that is easy to state, easy to tell people what it is, and write it down.
Yeah. Yeah. You're right. You have to know what your mission is. Yeah. So here's a really good kind of test, right? Unfortunately, when you go and tell somebody your vision or mission, you probably know it's a good idea if, I don't know, a few percent think it's a good idea. Most people are just going to tear it up. I'm going to start an Italian restaurant that's going to focus on...
gnocchi.
Just gnocchi, right? And they say, oh, that's a terrible idea.
I'm going to call it Pinocchio's.
God, you've actually thought about this. Okay. But you know, you come off with that, and someone, if people are like, it's terrible, it's never going to work, if you can see it, well, then you got a chance, right? So, but if when those people criticize your vision, you start to doubt it, then you do not have a vision, right? And when people criticize your vision, you are afraid of your vision, or it changes. Changing isn't bad, but if you don't believe in it anymore, then you don't have a vision.
A vision has to be refined to the point where it's unassailable.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean that you're not taking criticism and you're not taking reviews and you're not taking improvements to what you're doing. But you're not ready to go. You're not ready to get in there and actually start running that business until your vision is refined to the point where in your mind, people can't tear it down.
Yeah.
If they can, you got to go back and revise. You got to rethink your vision. You got to rework it.
Yep.
When it's crystallized and when it's ready, then you're ready to execute.
Perfectly said. Number two. So first was vision. Number two, make a budget. I can't tell you we have investment groups, all fantastic people, and they invested their money in belief in our vision and our capability. And it's a burden. It's a wonderful burden, but it's also a heavy burden of nothing I want more is for them to recoup their money and get their ROI.
Yeah.
And I've never managed a budget in my life like the MLU. I mean, it's like I can't even describe it. There's so many moving pieces that it has been quite the learning experience and tough at times. But we make a budget and we think through it, and it makes us critical thinkers of how this league works. And because you do that, you start to, again, make your vision stronger and see how you're going to achieve your vision. If you don't have a budget and how you're going to spend your money and your time, because time is money,
yes,
you just have not. You're just guessing, and you can get lucky, as people do, especially in the tech sector, right? You're doing something, you're coding away, and all of a sudden kind of bing. Works. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. I mean, Facebook, is like the famous story of that, right? He's coding away at it, he's making it something, and he's just going full steam. But he doesn't have the worries of a budget because he's in school, so he's got a little protection there, right? For food and shelter. But that's not you. You're not going to write Facebook. so don't think about that. You need to make a budget that you can survive on, especially if you're, the best time to start a business is in your young 20s, right? I would say.
So, yeah, I mean, get in there. A budget, in my mind, is a numerical reflection of your vision to a certain extent. It has to take it and make it make sense. And it's particularly important because you need money to start a business.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want to get money, you need to show somebody how you're going to return their money. I know we look at a lot of these things, like these Kickstarter campaigns and things like that, and I think that's great. Like, there are seed money from that type of stuff is fine, but there comes a time, even in a business that's able to fund itself to get started off of one of those campaigns, there comes a time when you actually have to start creating a scenario that returns money to investors, right, rather than, just collecting donations toward an end.
Right.
So what is my model? And then how can I reflect that model in a budget that's detailed and that shows all of the line items that are going to go into making this business? Because the biggest part of the budget process, too, from doing this, what we do now, and also from doing construction projects with Post Green for years, is that doing the budget, that process of creating the budget, opens your eyes to parts of your business that you may have missed.
Mm-hmm.
And, even a preliminary budget, before you have money and before you understand, having all of that in place is going to introduce you. You're going to find things. You're like, oh, I didn't run an Italian restaurant, and somehow I forgot I need
Parmesan cheese.
Yeah. And that price fluctuates. Yep. That price fluctuates a lot. Keep your eye on it. You got to build contingency into your Parmesan cheese line item. I'd say anywhere between 20 and 25%. Pinocchio's.
Good. Pinocchio's, whatever.
Pinocchio's.
So number one, vision. Number two, make a budget. Number three, this is what I think is the most important, is sales. I actually have it written here three times. Sales, sales, sales. The only way you make money is if you sell. That's it.
Yeah.
You have to sell. Whatever you have, you have to sell. And, you know, it's so common that people, especially if they love the product, they make a product that's great and they keep going back and making the product better because just version, you know, 2 will be better and then version 3 will be better. And then you go out of business because you never sold it. And version 1 was good enough to sell. And that would have made you, that would have allowed you to make version 2 better than version 5. Right?
Yeah.
But you, sales is hard. Sales is, and I think here's the best way I can think about it. Our sales team upstairs for sponsorships, you have no idea unless you do this job how degrading and depressing it can be at times. And
now who's being sad?
Because it's the point you need to accept. You're going to call up people. You're going to give pitches. You're going to present. You're going to do – sometimes you're going to do the best job you've ever done, and people will just tell you that you're crap. Or they won't tell you it. They'll treat you like crap. They'll treat you like they're bored. They don't show up. They promise you a sale, but then they never call you back. You call them 50 times and then finally get a hold of them, and they say no way. It is brutal. But yeah. When you get it, it is – ooh, it's a ride. And you can see how the sponsorship team right now – is converted to, you know, just so excited because they're closing deals and it feels really good.
But even when they're closing deals, in which they are, and they're doing it at a great rate, your conversion rate
is 20%, 30% maybe.
That's of the calls. That's of the people you actually get to talk to. The number of calls you make, your conversion rate on that is a lot lower.
Right. And they're just, you get crushed by it. So you're going to have to put up with that. And it is rough in the beginning because let's remember, we started this business back in 2012. I got here. Here's just a small little anecdote. When I started this, I got laughed at, I mean, repeatedly, by the stadiums, by friends, by families. I mean, it was constant. And, you know, that drove me to do something else. And then you were in here. You were in the beginning, right in the beginning. You came in and, you know, you saw the stuff. You got the pieces of this. And then when we started the MLU, it was only more. It was a whole... You know, waves crashing of insults and negativity.
You're doing what?
Yes. Yeah, it was just that. So what we talked about this with Michelle Kondracki yesterday. We used to say, you know, we work for a professional Ultimate Frisbee League and people would laugh. But those days are almost over.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
In 3 years, it's changed. And I'm really proud of that because we know we are a huge part of that. We tell people that and they're like, oh, cool. Ultimate Frisbee is awesome.
Oh, yeah. I've seen that thing. I saw that on ESPN. It's Comcast, yeah.
So it's no longer this joke anymore.
And I saw that in my conversation cards.
Yeah, I saw it in my conversation cards.
At the last cocktail party I had.
And that is, that, you know, those rewards are incredible. And that's part of being in a business, which I feel, the other thing I love about our business, I feel like everybody here is an entrepreneur, right? Because everyone's taking the risks at all the things we're doing, and it feels like this lightning in a bottle group, and there's nothing better than that.
Yeah.
Seriously, when you've done another job, then you come into a job where you're in, filled with entrepreneurs, it feels really special. So, go ahead.
I wanted to go back to sales a little bit there, too. I think that your sales key, obviously, just to getting your product out, getting your service out, whatever you're doing, you have to be selling it. And you have to be selling it all the time, no matter where you are, networking, et cetera. And it is hard. You're going to hit a lot of no's. What I like about that, too, though, that's very important to even just running a business like this and to taking that kind of criticism and that doubt on is sales is formative. Sales will teach you to deal with that.
Yeah.
Even if you move out of that position in your company, which most people who start their company hope to do as quickly as possible, going through sales and doing it yourself will teach you about yourself and will teach you about how important your business is to you.
Makes you strong. You're right. That's brilliantly said. So, number one, vision. Number two, budget. Number three, sales. Number four, brand. So I would not have put this one in here 10 years ago or maybe even 5 years ago. I am not a designer. I know when things look good. At least I think I like to know when things look good, but I could never design anything. I always ignored brand. Always. I would have named a company that, you know, Computer Guys or Computer Techs, right? Like with no worry about that whatsoever, where you always very focused on the brand. And it really hit me one day that the better brand just usually wins, right? Like there's a great story of books.com and amazon.com. Now, yeah. I'm probably wrong on some of the details here, but the point is that books.com did what amazon.com did in the beginning.
Yeah, right? They were both online booksellers. And when books.com bought their domain and announced that they had it and spent a lot of money to kind of secure that domain, everyone's like, oh, well, they got books.com.
Right.
Anyone looking for books is clearly going to go to books.com.
Yeah, but no one knows what Amazon means.
Right.
But one of them was a brand, and that person had the creativity, right? Is it Jeff Bezos or Bezos?
Yeah, yeah.
Had the creativity and vision of what Amazon, A to Z, I always like that, could be. And books was just books.com. It's only books. See, that's the problem. It was only books.
Right.
Right.
And it was just generically books.
Right.
Right. It didn't encompass the brand books.com doesn't encompass customer service. It doesn't encompass shipping efficiency. It doesn't encompass selection. Like, it just doesn't have the full roundness that you can pour into a brand that carries a broader name.
Yeah.
Like Amazon in this case.
And that was like us with MLU, right? Like MLU, no one forgets it. People love it. It's such a brand. And you know, you've done that. And your team has done that. And it feels like you're so proud of it. No one ever says MUL or LMU, you know what I mean? Right. It's something that just, if that brand fits and works, and it's so recognizable. And I'm really proud of that. And what I would say about that is your brand should be something that, like, it fires you up. Like, it's connectable. Right. It shouldn't be something that is hard to say, hard to look at, confusing. It should be something that you're like, ooh, that works. It's sharp. And another quick story is I remember as a young developer, I was using MSN Search. Mm. This is back when when search engines used meta tags, which I'm saying most kids probably have no idea what that means. But you could literally would not index the whole page text. It would read tags that you put into the page.
Invisible to the reader.
Invisible to the reader. So, you know, porn sites were famous for taking meta tags and putting, you know, common search terms in them so you would get that return. So you're searching for, like, you know, Scarlet Letter, and you're getting a pornography site,
right?
Because that's a search. So Google came along and said, we're gonna index the entire page. And that's a brilliant idea of what they've done.
Mm-hmm.
But their brand, the fact that the Google search page was just a box with two buttons, search now or I'm feeling lucky.
Right.
Was and Google just up at the top is what made it a brand. It was a brand. Because if it was, you know, searchengine.com, I guarantee it'd be gone right
Which
now.
I'm sure existed.
Because you know.
I don't remember it, but I'm positive it was out there.
Yeah, you're right. I'm positive. You know? I mean, there was Alta Vista, all these ones. They didn't work any less. I don't know if they did. I mean, I'm a developer, but I don't know. But I know that Google, it just flowed, ran off your tongue. Google it, right? Not, you didn't say Alta Vista it, MSN search it, but you said Google it. It was brilliant. And that brand, all things being equal, got them forward.
And Greg has found us searchengine.com.
Yeah, Greg went to searchengine.com. It works.
Look, search
is
powered by Google.
searchengine.com is powered by Google. That's a good lesson.
That makes me very happy.
It's exactly like Google.
I think that in terms of brand, if the budget is a numerical representation of your vision, the brand is the outwardly visible representation of your vision.
Yeah.
And it encompasses literally every single thing you do. What do you wear when you show up to a meeting? Who do you talk to? Who do you take meetings with? How do your people answer the phone? How do your people reach out on the phone?
How do you price your product?
How do you price your product? Everything, every single little piece of this is brand. And you have to be willing sometimes to sacrifice big deals and big opportunities, quote-unquote opportunities, in favor of your brand. We talked to a manufacturer just the other day, if you remember, and they said that they burned down a $100,000 deal and just lost that money because they kept the merchandise for it because the person who bought it was selling their stuff at 10% or 10 cents less than they were supposed to.
Yep.
And if you do that, what he said is this, like, yes, we lost $100,000 at that deal, but over the course of the life of that brand, we're going to make millions more dollars by not sacrificing the brand for that short-term cash reward. And that's every decision you make has to be like that. We've turned down investment money because we felt that the investors' ideas and positions on things were going to negatively affect our brand position.
Correct.
And, you know,
it's not easy.
It is your business.
It's not easy. In
reality.
We've been pretty public that we've turned down, truthfully, millions of dollars of investment because it wasn't in line. It was, at the end of the day, it wasn't good for our company. That's tough. It's not, again, you're going to have to make those decisions because you have to have a brand. And it's good to have someone who's good at it. That's another thing. If you're not good at it, recognize it.
You need someone who's obsessive about it.
You need someone who can do it, because I couldn't do it.
Yeah.
Like, if you weren't here, the MLU wouldn't be what it is. I couldn't do it. I don't have the capability. I can't make that. Just like you can't...
You have such a list.
I do.
You have such a list.
Just like, you know, just like there's some things that you aren't that good at. Okay, a few things here and there. Okay. All
right, so I thought you were going to unfold an actual list from your pocket and just read through it.
Okay. Last one, because we got. Oh, we're actually good on time here. We're gonna rock through this one.
Yeah,
last one is, you got to know when to fold. You got to know when to hold. And this is not easy, because there's kind of the thing of don't quit, just keep charging forward.
Yep.
But there's also the thing of when it's not right, you got to drop it, move on, and that is really, really hard. I'll say that one thing that's easy is if you have a vision for something, you truly want to make it work, just keep doing it, because it's going to kill you halfway, but or maybe 3/4 away, but you know, you're going to get there if you keep working towards it. However, if something is just broken and you can't fix it, you have to move on from that, right? It doesn't mean the company has to, you know, be gone, but what you were trying. We've learned this. We have done, I don't know, hundreds of things that were like, nope, that's broken, right? That you realize that does not work. And I can't think of things right off the top of my head right now, but
I remember a software company.
Well, I meant in the MLU. Oh, got it. Nick and I started a software company. Let's just say we made a great product with a great brand, and we got sued for patent infringement.
Yep.
And that was the end of that one.
Yeah.
It was called universepoint.com. You can still go there today.
Is the site still there?
I think it forwards the MLU since I own it.
Yeah, there you go.
So, but we own it.
We do.
If you want to start a company called universepoint.com, I'll just give you the website.
Yeah, we'll hand it right over to you.
Yeah. But be careful.
No, I mean, this is this know when to hold and know when to fold thing is a perfect example of, if you have a clarity of vision and you have a well-defined brand and you have a well-defined budget, you can tell when an idea that you're trying to execute violates any one of those three things.
Yeah.
And if it does, it means you're off track and you have to drop it and you have to rework it. And it's hard to do sometimes, because you get sort of pot committed on an idea. You've invested enough money into a certain way of doing something, and it's not giving you the return your budget says it's supposed to, you got to leave it. If you've invested a certain amount of time and energy into producing something that it turns out is not aligned with your brand, you got to drop it.
Yeah.
And the important thing is not to grow attached to anything that you're doing at the expense of vision, budget, and brand.
Yeah. No, it's true. And you're, you know, when you're faced with these decisions, it's also really good to find someone who you know, respect their opinion, will take advice from, and run it through people who, again, have a business expertise that you would respect. Right?
We could add that as a sixth to this list.
Get a mentor.
Find people you trust to talk to.
It's really hard.
You so desperately need it, but it's hard to find people who are able to give good advice.
Really, it
is difficult, but find them.
But if you play Frisbee and you want business advice from two old coots, we're happy to help.
Are we coots?
Well, I think so.
I hope to someday be a coot. I don't feel like
I'm a coot.
I'm coot-ish.
Tycoon. Ooh, a tycoon.
Yeah.
That's cool.
We're certainly not that.
So you can tweet at us, at Jeff Snader, at Nick Darling, or at Cleats Cufflinks. Have any questions about business, top five most important things we went over were vision, budget, sales, brand, and you got to know when to fold and know when to hold.
Yeah, and I think that I can see us coming back to some of this stuff too, so... Stay tuned to Cleats and Cufflinks.
Yeah. People want to hear us talk about
questions,
business stuff.
We'll talk more.
This is very cufflinksy. So
yeah, it is.
About that. Okay, we got a few minutes left, and Matt Hanley. that's the sound of our set falling apart.
Yeah.
See, we're going to fold on that one.
Yeah.
Matt Hamlin. It's at I am Matt Hamlin, right?
I'm.
The letter I am. That's what I meant. I am Matt Hamlin. Sent us a tweet. It said, I'd love to know the origin of the MLU. So
yeah.
We have 6 minutes. So I'm going to go through that with you in 6 minutes. You ready? All right, Matt. It started off with, I'm at a Southpaw practice, which is the club team for Philadelphia. I was the coach. Trent Dillon comes up to me and says, have you heard of the Audl? Of course, of which I responded, what the heck's that? Right. So now you know the story there. He explains it to me. I realize that there are owners of the Philadelphia Spinners, and I reach out to them because I, if they need help, I'm going to help. I meet with these two owners in a California pizza kitchen, two fantastic guys, right? But they knew nothing about Ultimate Frisbee. They had a they were rappers.
Right, yeah, rappers.
And did some very cool stuff. And
they have a music label or something? Is that where they came out of? Yeah, they had a label.
But so they go through this and say, we're going to hire you as our GM and coach. We want you to run the team. Fast forwarding to a few days before the tryout, they call me up. And again, they're great guys. They call me up and say, we got to be honest. This just isn't what we want to do. We were hoping for a whole lot less work.
Yeah.
Which means that I just went from a GM position that was supposed to pay me to the proposition of buying the team.
Right. Actually ending up owning the Spinners.
So I, you know, I walk home and I know how the conversation with, you know, I know the conversation with my wife is just, she's going to be, you know, the
less than enthusiastic.
Yeah, she's like, come on, like, how did this turn to this? So I had the conversation with Lori, who is my most wonderful supporter, because she said, I don't even know why you're asking me, because you know you're going to do it. And I really, you know, it was the way she said it was perfect. It was like, you know, I love you and I'm going to support you, and you'll never forgive yourself, because she knows how I work, that I'm not going to give it a try.
Yep.
So with that, I took on the Philadelphia Spinners, and we ran that first season, which you helped me out a whole bunch. Especially with those programs that everyone loved with the Marie's graphics.
Marie's drawings. My wife did some great drawings for the first program. I also left the Jeff off of your first name somehow.
Yeah,
it was a font mistake. You were F. Nader.
I was F. Nader. So people were like, F, I'm such a huge fan. Are you related to Ralph Nader? yeah, it was great. Through that season, I remember I got involved very late.
Yeah.
Through that season, I became a bit disenfranchised with the way the AUDL was running and the way their vision was. I was really concerned about...
Disenchanted, might be a better word.
Disenchanted.
Yeah. Disenchanted.
Excuse me. I didn't like the expansion model and how it was working out. It seemed to me that it was going to take a very large investment from a lot of people, and there was a lot of... I mean, it's already risky, and it felt very, very risky. And there were also some lawsuits going on. Everyone knows about that stuff. So I worked.
Well, probably not really, but
well, yeah. I don't
know. but we won't get into it.
Not involved with me, but with you know, there were just not the best things going on, and there were a lot of issues. Put it that way. And I talked with the owner, the then owner, and we really came to an agreement that I was going to leave. I was going to do something else, and I didn't tell him directly that I was starting another league, but I certainly said, you know, I have intentions of continuing. And I, you know, we met up, and I gave you my pitch.
Yep, you sure did. Because you had said, you called me and said, you know, I got the Spinners out of the AUDL. And I said, well, legally, like, you now own them and they're separated from the league. Yep, got them out of there. I was like, oh, what on earth are you going to do with them? Like, well, funny thing. Interesting that you mentioned that.
Interesting. Here was the thing, though. You couldn't pass it up because it was too good. It was too good of an idea. I laid it out, and you took the bait.
That's the problem. It is a really good idea.
It's a really good idea.
You know, we've pitched this idea a bunch of times, and we're much, much better at it now than you were then. But still, you know, my feelings about Ultimate were relatively ambivalent at that point. I had been out of the game for a number of years. Marie still played, but I hadn't really played even in a number of years. But the business proposition was so compelling that there was just something there.
Yep. And you were the first person to properly equate to that the number of people playing a sport directly correlated to the success of the sport as a spectator sport. And that's when really things, and that's clicked for us more and more, and even now, but things started to click. Like, wait a minute. If all of these correlations are true, this is a juggernaut. This is has billion-dollar potential if it holds up, which it does. There's just no doubt about it. But yeah, you were the first one to say, I'm going to do this because of the actual potential the what's the like the empirical is it empirical is the word like that you can measure the measurable potential that this has.
Yeah, and it would I mean, and in the end, that's the only thing that you know. It would be hard to you know because I left working on PostScreen full time. My partners run that, Chad and Courtney Ludeman, a fantastic company doing fantastic residential development here in Philly.
Brilliant brand.
I moved away from that. I didn't go get another job, which, you know, my wife questioned a little bit.
Mm-hmm. See, people are going to question you. Told you.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And I did that not because I love Ultimate Frisbee. I do. And I'm glad that I'm working in this space. But that had nothing to do with that decision because you can't make a decision about your life and about your kids' lives and your family's life based on the fact that you just really like something. And so, and I also wasn't that interested if we had been talking about having a team that would just constantly run at this kind of low run rate and having a league where maybe we had a bunch more teams and we just sort of play this recreational thing. The idea that grabbed me, and I think that grabbed you as well, is that this could be a top tier sport. Mm-hmm. And that we have the acumen and the resources to take it there.
Yeah. And so my first thing was to get Nick Darling on board, because if he didn't get on board, I was going to scuttle the whole thing. Cause I couldn't do it. So I was able to convince you quite easily, by the way. Let's let him confirm that he wanted to do this.
There may have been whiskey involved.
And then there was a lot of whiskey. And then we set out on a mission to find the people. Like, we need to find the people that can be the right key personnel for us.
Yeah.
And we went and got all of them. And we found everybody we wanted, and that really was a big piece. And since then, I can tell you that things you think are going to work can surprise you. When it started off, Nick vouched for Lindy Sabloff. 100%.
Yeah.
So let's bring Lindy on. She's going to be this piece over here, and she's going to be a great addition. Nothing against Lindy, but I was like, okay. I mean, in the very beginning, I had no knowledge of her.
Yeah.
And she's turned into one of the extreme key people.
Yeah.
So it's like, you don't know how everything's going to work, but if you get good people, things work out. And then we formed our vision of it. A league that had a very slow expansion model, but a very aggressive brand model of building teams in cities that would become solvent over a number of years and work and allow us to grow more teams in that same method. Much like, you know, we did an enormous amount of research on every league and went and met people in the MLS and all these other things in Major League Lacrosse and had all these conversations so we could, because it's hard to find knowledge. So, you know, we were knowledge Absolutely. Starved and we just kept meeting with people. And the last piece, we found investors who could think of this sport like a business, but still had a passion for the sport and the proper blend of it. And the MLU was born.
It was born. And, you know, we have, I think, some some fun stories that we can tell, and we will on Cleats and Cufflinks. I mean, I look back at starting working across the street, drinking six cups of coffee apiece in order to be able to sit in the coffee shop,
yep,
and continue working three or four of us around a table, to now we're moving in February to a 3,500 square foot office,
yeah.
You know, with we'll have probably 15-20 people there during the season.
Yeah, I mean, that's the truth.
It's an amazing difference.
We started off in a coffee shop. He's not even lying. We would buy six cups of coffee because that was the only way they'd let us stay there.
Yeah.
And now we're moving to... We're already in a great office, and we're moving to an even better office.
Yeah.
And we found fantastic people along the way, and there's all sorts of wonderful stories in there. I guess the last piece of the origin is when it started, we were in September.
Yep.
September 29th.
This was good.
Forgive my coughing. September 29th, and we played our first game on April 20th.
Yeah, that was one of the funniest parts of our first conversation, if you remember.
I do.
You're like, I want to start this league. I'm like, okay, you've convinced me. This is a good idea. This is an interesting idea. Like, I want, and then you said, I want to start the first season in April. And I said, okay, April of 2015.
That is 100% true. You said, what April are you talking about?
Because you were talking about the wrong April.
We were.
So, yeah, we built websites, found GMs, you know, found content people, found social media entities. We found stadiums, booked insurance, booked travel between September and April.
Yeah.
That was insane.
And that was September of 2012. And we actually launched it officially in November of 2012.
Everybody remembers the countdown clocks.
Yep. And right now, it is December of 2014. We're 2 years and 1 month later. And we have TV contracts and Comcast in five of our cities.
Yeah.
We have millions of views on YouTube.
Lots of views.
We have tens of thousands of subscribers. We have great people working all around us. And we're nowhere close to done.
Oh, just getting started.
And that's pretty fun.
I love it.
So with that, people, thank you for listening to Cleats and Cufflinks. Send us your questions. Send us your comments. And keep on keeping on.
Love it. Jeffrey.
Nicholas.